Senator Higgins, at the end, it's just a fairly simple bill. We've got three larger bills, which are the several jobs bills that we'd like to hear. There is a fourth authored by Senator Metzen, and there's some work being done on that, so we're going to have to reschedule that for another day. Let me just indicate before we start that these bills are obviously finance bills, but obviously we don't have the money to fund them. So there are expenditures in the bill, but the hope is funding will come if it's there from the tax committee. So the intent would be to refer all of these bills to the tax committee. So two of them are Senator Saltzman. Senate File 2306 is the first bill on the agenda. So Senator Saltzman, whatever you'd like to start with. And Senator Thomas Tony moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why don't we start with Senate File 2306, which is the Minnesota Business Investment Company Credit Act. And Mr. Cassidy is here as well, if he would be willing to come to the table, because he's been very involved with this bill. And I believe what we do have an amendment that addresses where the fees would be deposited, and that's the A1 amendment.
Oh, that's fine.
Oh.
Oh. Okay, Senator Saltzman, we're having the amendments distributed. Did you wish to have this adopted then before we start?
I think so, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would. Okay. Because it does, it is a suggestion from staff that this would, it needs to be added so that the fees can be deposited into the correct accounts.
Okay. So, Senator Saltzman, as I understand, this Mr. Mossman, which is helping me out, takes the fee receipts, puts them in the general fund, and then provides the appropriation. Is that correct?
Yes,
Mr. Mossman,
Chair.
Did you?
Mr. Chair and members, the language as the bill is currently drafted would have these fees collected. It does not quite specify yet the language where the fees are deposited in terms of which state fund. And the fees are statutorily appropriated to the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The amendment here essentially would clarify that the fees be deposited in the general fund, and rather than a statutory appropriation, you can see Section 3 here in the amendment would add an appropriation to direct appropriate those monies to the Department of Employment and Economic Development as opposed to statutorily.
Okay. We have the A1 amendment in front of us. Does anybody wish to move it?
I'll move it.
Senator Roebling moves adoption of the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Saltzman.
There. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. You have seen this bill before. Last year it was part of the tax bill that was passed by the Senate, and it has been referred to as the CAPCO bill. It is an economic development tool where we're able to provide credits to insurance companies who use their investments to invest in companies here in this state. And what I do want to note is that this program has been around for a number of years in different states and has seen great success, has also had a number of issues. And so this bill is really based on the best practices in many states where it has been used. I do want to comment on the fiscal note that the fiscal note from Deed notes that there is a $75,000 cost, and the fees collected that this bill is based on generate, $37 million, and that was based on the costs that we have, received from Deed. So we're a little confused by the fiscal note because we attempted to base the bill on what Deed felt the operating cost was. So we're unsure of the amount that is reflected here. And so Mr. Nelson is here from Deed. We've just, chatted with him a little bit about that because we are trying to make that the operation of the account is covered by the fees collected. The way the program works is that there is a deferred credit, and so when you look at the revenue note, you will see that the cost of this program is not in the next, you know, the next three fiscal years. Perhaps Mr. Cassidy could then, you know, just respond a little bit more about the work that we've done on this bill to address some of the concerns that have come to us, you know, from the other states. But between this and the Angel Bill, it really is to provide important capital for companies that, you know, need the capital to grow in Minnesota. And it is something that has been very successful in other states. And again, we have tried to build on the successful language that has been incorporated into other states and make this very unique to Minnesota.
Mr. Cassidy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Cassidy with Leonard Street and Dinard. We represent a consortium of venture capital firms, including Enhanced Capital and Advantage Capital. Basically, with regard to this bill, I mean, this entire bill, and I think Senator Bach's bill is coming up later, is really all about how do we leverage capital during tough times. And the Small Business Investment Tax Credit bill that Senator Saltzman, Senate File 2306, does exactly that. It's a program that has been around since the late 90s in different renditions, passed in 12 different states, Missouri, Wisconsin, New York, Florida, Texas, and has been reauthorized 28 different times by state legislatures around the country. As Senator Saltzman said, what this program does is basically leverage the capital that insurers have. Insurers are required by law to reserve capital, and that capital has to be invested somewhere. This provides an incentive through a tax credit to have insurers invest that capital in the state of Minnesota in hopefully small, emerging, growing businesses of 100 employees or less that are based in Minnesota. This bill would provide, I believe, $100 million in tax credits, which would leverage about $125 million in capital. That capital, in turn, would be invested by firms that are certified by the Department of Economic Development. Typically, it's between 4 and 10 different firms that get certified by whatever governing or whatever regulatory authority is given that power in each state. We expect there to be 5 or 6 in Minnesota, given the size of this fund. Not to get ahead of ourselves, Senator Bach's bill is a little bit smaller, $60 million in tax credits, which would leverage about $80 million or $75 million in capital. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be willing to stand for questions. The fees in here, by the way, I just want to point out to the members, are registration fees. Initially, the firms that are going to be the investment firms that will actually go out on the street and find businesses that need the capital have to register with the Department of Economic Development. They have to be certified, and that cost initially is $7,500 for their initial registration and $5,000 each year thereafter. That's how we came up with the $37,500 a year based on an average of 5 companies that would be certified. And it's been consistent throughout the 2 years that this bill has been around.
Mr. Cassidy, just a comment and a question. The comment is that you said this would help leverage capital in difficult times. I guess it's, 9 years ago now? Senator Kelly and I had a fairly big package in better times that wasn't the tax credit, but it was a venture capital and high-tech bill, which we passed. We had all that in the Senate, the House, the governor were not particularly interested. But what I noted at that point is that Minnesota was clearly behind the national curve in terms of some of these efforts. And so whether it's good times or bad times, we need to do something like this. So that's the editorial. The question is, what's the criteria for certification companies?
Mr. Chairman, the criteria, if you're talking about the companies that'll actually be invested in, those companies, so if you just take an average company, of 100, basically they have to be 100 employees or less. They have to be located in Minnesota. They have to be unbankable, basically, meaning that they can't get a loan from their traditional banking relationship. Those are kind of the base criteria. So smaller companies that are located here that are going to stay here.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is kind of out of my field. And so when one of those small companies wants one of the loans and the insurance companies have pooled money, is that what I understand, to put together a fund, how much interest are the small businesses typically going to be paying?
Good question. Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Robel. Most of these investments are going to be equity investments, so that the investment firms that are out looking for these businesses are going to take a stake in those businesses and to help them grow to run those companies. About a third of this capital will be an actual loan. Those interest rates are going to be typically above traditional market rates because these are going to be riskier loans, but they're not going to be out of the ordinary. But remember, these are going to be riskier ventures, investments with firms that are really locked in. I think what you probably dealt with 9 years ago, this kind of valley of death, capital valley of death, where you're in between developing your product and actually starting to grow, and your balance sheet is underwater because you can't get your product on the street. So you need someone to take that next step and take that risk with you. And that's where these investments are really targeted. It's in between the angel stage and the big venture capital stage, where companies are looking for $5, $10, $15 million. These are typically investments. They're probably between $500,000 and $3 million. So they're fairly modest investments. So they're not the typical large venture capital ones that you'll see in the headlines in the newspaper, and yet they're not a $100,000 investment that you might see from a angel investor.
Sarah Salter.
There. And on that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, what we're seeing in Minnesota is that you will see some reports where, you know, Minnesota is doing really well with those large venture capital funds, because we do have a lot of very successful products here. It's those smaller startup companies where we are lagging behind, you know, the nation in terms of the smaller seed capital funds. And this is really, these two bills really address those smaller, what we heard from on the companies when this bill was heard in Business, Industry, and Jobs. We heard from a lot of folks who said, you know, it's easier to raise $5 million than it is to raise $500,000, because it's those first funds that are so hard. Once you have a successful idea, everyone wants to get on board. But it's those smaller companies, and that's where I think, you know, Minnesota, that's where we have great opportunity in this state, because we still have a wonderful research university that is doing amazing work, but it's having the capital to take those businesses to the next stage. And it's a different kind of economic development than probably we've seen in the past, because there's more additional research needed, there's clinical trials, there's additional research, project development, and that's where these bills are an encouragement to private investments in those. So instead of just saying the state's going to fully fund it with a grant, how do we leverage either, you know, these investments from insurance companies, which could be investing anywhere, to keep their dollars here in Minnesota and help us build the economy where I think we have the greatest potential?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to understand how the tax credit works. So suppose an insurance company puts $100 million into this fund, mm-hmm. How do they get the credit for it? They can't get $100 million worth of credit, but so they get a percent of that, that is taken off of their profit for the year when they're doing their taxes, and it just reduces the amount of tax they pay?
You're almost there, Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling. Basically, how this would work is, first of all, investment managers would go to an insurance company to ask them to be investors in a fund. So let's just say if we go downtown here to St. Paul Travelers. St. Paul Travelers has been an investment in this program in other states. They agree to invest $15 million and create a fund. 4 years from the time that they put that investment in, they'll be eligible for a tax credit, but they'll only get one-fourth of their tax credit for each of the next 4 years. So basically this will run its course for 8 years. The first 4 years will be no tax credit. And then the following 4 years, the tax credit will kick in, and they'll receive that. And the tax credit will be a tax credit against their premium tax obligation. Insurers pay premium taxes on all their sales in each state, so it'll be an offset to the premium taxes that they already pay.
Yeah.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Senator Saltzman, how will this be marketed to small businesses? I'm thinking of a lot of businesses that are owned by people of color in my district, mm-hmm. or maybe in Senator Berglund's district, who have, a small business on Lake Street, and maybe they're looking at West Broadway to expand to, or, you know, people who've got an idea and just can't get it into, a real business. how are we going to market this to those folks?
To that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Sagan, I will attempt to answer that, and maybe Mr. Cassidy, if I'm not covering this, is that, first of all, it's that businesses do not apply to this, but there would be these fund managers who would then be going out and seeking businesses and looking at different companies that would be successful, that, you know, could benefit from this. But you raise a very good point of, you know, do we need to, you know, provide some incentive? The one thing that we've heard from, you know, the marketplace is that should the state be choosing winners and losers, or should it be something where it's market-driven and that we're looking at those companies? Mr. Cassidy, do you have any other comments to that effect to perhaps address this issue?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, Senator Saltzman's exactly right. This program sets up a very different economic development model. It gets away from it being a bureaucratic model inside a state agency where state agency employees are trying to find businesses that need capital, and actually is market-driven. The investment managers that need to be certified under this bill and under this legislation, their job and their incentive is to go out on the street and find good investments, and it's not targeted toward anything in particular. It tries to not be too prescriptive, but a good investment's a good investment, whether it's on Lake Street or in Bowabic or in Plymouth. Those deals are out there. People need the capital, and their job will be to go out and find those. Now, what are going to be the avenues to get there? Some of the ideas are, I mean, there obviously are high-tech associations, some of whom are in the room right now. There are, the Minnesota Chamber has their Grow Minnesota program, which is basically a network where they go out and find out what businesses are thinking, what they need, and obviously one of their top needs is capital. They know where the businesses are that actually are hungry for capital right now. The Minnesota Collaborative, which is a kind of, you know, basically an investment or venture capital network, that's the kind of networking that will go on to find these kind of investments.
And Mr. Chair, and Mr. Cassidy, those all sound really good. I don't think they get to the people I'm talking about.
Okay.
I don't think the Minnesota Chamber has a clue what business is on West Broadway, what business is on Lake Street or downtown Bowabic, unless they belong to that organization. I'm trying to figure out how to get people who want to have a business able to find a step up like this.
Mr. Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, I think another answer to that also is looking at the banking relationships that some of these businesses have when they get to that point in the business cycle, business life cycle, and they're having a hard time getting a loan from their bank. I think the banking system is also going to look to, you know, here's another place for you to go, and hopefully that's to keep their banking relationship intact so that down the road when the company is starting to grow and become successful and it's got a good balance sheet, that they'll have keep that successful banking relationship going. So I think there's going to be a lot of collaboration in the marketplace that'll take place with businesses, their bankers, and their lenders.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Cassidy, I just hope it's the whole marketplace, not just a little,
absolutely,
you know, already defined marketplace.
Further questions, comments? Senator Saltzman?
Just to note, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Watson pointed this out to me on line 9.23, I want to point out that there is language in the bill that after these investments are made is that we do have this language that the state shall receive 10% of the net profits on qualified investments into the future. And as this moves to taxes, if it does, we will be working on additional language to describe how that will happen to set out a format. But we do want to talk about how that when we make these kind of investments, that there should be an incentive then for the state to be able to recoup the fact that it has made these investments in these companies. So we will be working on that, you know, specific provision.
Okay. And I should point out to members that in the packet you've got a summary of the fiscal notes for each of the three bills we're hearing today, which shows the layout of general fund costs, the revenues, the fees, and so on. And so there's actually a little bit of a difference between Senator Saltzman's two bills. They balance when put together, but this bill actually is just a little bit under. But Mr. Mossman has worked with the authors of these bills to make sure that everything balances for our purpose. The second thing I would mention is obviously a key part of this bill would be the credits. We're not funding the credits in this bill at all. the tax committee will have to figure out how they will handle that revenue, where they would handle that revenue. We're funding the fees, the appropriation from the fees, but that's why the bill would have to go to the tax committee, because obviously the bills, as it is in front of us, is not paid for, and the credits would have to come out of the tax committee. Further discussion, questions, motions?
What's the duration of this?
Senator Saltzman?
I don't believe, Mr. Chair, that there is a sunset date, but there is an evaluation included because we do need to be able to look at this, to look at these programs. Now, excuse me, this is for 4 years. This covers 4 years. I'm thinking of the Angel Bill for a second. So it would be for 4 years, and then, you know, the state would be able to look at, is this successful? What kind of investments have been made? We have seen in other states that they have renewed this program, that they have been able to document success in terms of new businesses created, and some have been extremely successful in Wisconsin. Some of their larger companies started with, you know, under this particular program. So that's...
Senator Tomassoni. Okay, Senator Tomassoni moves that Senate File 2306, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Taxes.
That's what it is.
If there's no further discussion on the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Then we have Senate File 2307. Senator Tomassoni moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Saltzman, 2307.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are two amendments for Senate File 2307. This is the Angel Investor Credit Bill. And the first, the A3 amendment, I understand, is similar to the language that was just adopted for 2306, which has to do with where the funds are deposited in the Treasury and credited. So that is similar language. And then I have the A4 amendment, if you'd like me to cover that now, Mr. Chair, or should I wait till it's adopted?
Well, why don't you, if you'd like to have that distributed, that's fine. Why don't you let us know what
the A4 does. What the A4 does is that, first of all, just to have a bit of background on the Angel Investor Credit Bill, this was also passed in the Senate, I think, two times last year. And over the interim, Senator Bach and I have been working with a number of people within the high-tech sector, within many different areas, to really make sure that every sentence in this bill is really the best bill that we can make it. We've looked at other states. We've tried to clarify some of the areas that needed additional work. And one of the things we talked about with the bill, and this is the A4 amendment, is making the credit refundable. And the way the bill is written right now, it is transferable, which means that someone who did not have a tax liability could transfer the credit to someone else. And that was to make it a little more competitive. It would also potentially attract out-of-state investors, which if we'd like to have their money, support businesses in Minnesota. But what in some of the discussions we had, it seemed to be easier to make this a credit that, can be refundable. And it achieves basically the same effect, but the cost in administering it is, significantly different. And so on the fiscal note from the Department of Revenue, by making it a refundable credit and it's no longer transferable, it does cost the overall administrative cost significantly. And so that is the A4 amendment. And again, that is something I should also note that there were a number of meetings over the interim. We've been meeting with the House. We've been meeting with the administration to try to find, consensus on the bill. And Representative Lencheski is now reviewing the bill and has some other changes. And Senator Bach is going to be working with her on agreement on some of those changes. So the bill as it is, reflects the work that we've done. There are some additional things that we're not going to propose today. They are tax issues. Because it's been a moving target a little bit. And Mr. Nelson from Deed has been extremely helpful in working, you know, with all of us, the stakeholder groups, and with the House and Senate and the administration on this bill. So I asked him if he could be here today as well.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A3 amendment. That's that depositing the fees thing.
Okay, we have set
and an appropriation.
Senator Saltzman, which amendment did you want?
On the A3 first, please, Mr. Chair.
All right, so we have Senator Higgins' motion on the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
This is somewhat typical state tax. Your tax is probably
that's a big one.
It's equivalent to a bonding figure.
Senator Saltzman, I was just talking to Mr. Mossman just to make sure the language in A4 was appropriate. That of course, this is the Finance Committee. We normally don't deal with boilerplate tax language. But apparently, the language in terms of A4 for the appropriation to the commissioner for the refund is tax language fairly commonly used. So, did you want us to take up the A4 amendment or what?
Well, we could take it up here, Mr. Chair. It would affect the fiscal note because in the fiscal note it does note that if we remove the transferability, it would significantly decrease the administrative cost. So if that's something that's important to this committee, otherwise we could deal with this in the tax committee, but I wanted to have the amendment ready because it does deal with the fiscal note.
Possibly, again, Mr. Mossman previously had worked for the House Tax Committee, so he knows this stuff, suggests that this might be an amendment more appropriate for the Tax Committee as opposed to our committee.
That is fine, Mr. Chair, as long as in our discussion of the fiscal note, because right now the fees collected, we had worked with Deed quite a bit to figure out what would be the cost of administering the program, and that was what we based our fees on. So with the transferability, those fees, you know, the fees do not cover the costs. So I'm happy to, you know, to work in the tax committee on this with Senator Bach, as long as we acknowledge that, the fiscal note as it is not covered at this point in time with this provision in the bill.
Yeah, as I mentioned with your previous bill, there's significant appropriations not covered because they'll have to be covered by the tax committee, whether they're going to impose a tax unless they have some money sitting around. Obviously, we don't have the money to cover the kinds of credits that you suggest, which is obviously why the bill is going to the tax committee.
So I'm fine in just withdrawing the A4. That is fine.
Okay. So if you want to discuss the bill further.
Yes. Senate File 2307 is referred to, Mr. Chair, as the Angel Investment Credit Bill. And, excuse me, essentially what this does is that angels are many times individual investors who come in and help a small company when it is probably after, a new business has gotten off the ground. They oftentimes work with, family and friends, and then they move into, angel investors. And these are smaller investments before you get to, say, a larger venture capitalist, and really help a small company. And what is important about angel investors is that they not only invest their dollars, but they also bring their expertise, and that they are a lot of times people who have been involved in these fields, and so they really want to not only invest but help a business get off the ground. And what we've seen is that, I know, Mr. Chair, that you have sponsored this legislation or something similar. I think that in 2001 the first angel investment credit bill was brought forward, and in the past 9 years Minnesota has not been able to pass this legislation, and as a result other states around us do have these programs in state around and in their states. And so some of our companies are moving to these states because it's easier for them to get the dollars that they need. It's really not an issue of us competing with other states. It's how we're incentivizing private investors to put their money into these kind of companies. If you had $100,000, you could think about a real estate investment right now. You could think about an addition to your home. Or with a 25% tax credit, there's an incentive for you to invest in a small startup company in Minnesota. and these companies are riskier. But they do represent a lot of ideas coming from, say, the University of Minnesota, spin-off companies. And we've heard from businesses that have great ideas and want to stay in Minnesota. They want to grow their jobs here. And yet if they can't find the capital to advance their idea, and it's a great idea, they're going to go to a state that has a policy in place that incentivizes people to invest. So it really is, again, about another tool in our economic development toolbox. It is a 25% tax credit. We also have some provisions here to, for their angel investor funds that are started. So it is limited to very small companies. And, again, we are working with the House to try to find the compromise language. So it's very targeted, again, to some of the proprietary areas, unlike the previous bill we heard. This is much more involved in those smaller companies. The other language that has been considered and that we do have language for, but I think it needs to be added in the tax committee. We've been working with the House again and with the major stakeholder groups, is some sort of a clawback, so that if companies do leave the state, that there would be ability for the state to recoup some of those investment credits that have been made. So we are trying to address some of the concerns, but at this point there's been tremendous support from many different groups, from the Biobusiness Alliance, Life Science Alley, the High Tech Association, many different small economic development groups. The Chamber has been behind this. So we really see this. It's great to have a bill that everybody at this point has loved so much. So I hope that describes the bill, Mr. Chair.
Questions for Senator Saltzman? Senator Saltzman, has there been any attempt to, it might be a little bit difficult, to quantify what this might mean in terms of potential number of companies? And I realize that the High Tech Association has been kind of up and down because of the lack of something like this. But any sense of what this might mean if you looked ahead 5-10 years?
Right. An excellent question, Mr. Chair. And what we have looked at is what has happened in Wisconsin, what has happened in other states that have had these funds. And I don't have those numbers with me today. But what we've heard is we've looked at the number of companies that have started as a result of this, the number of small companies that have started, the dollars generated in terms of startup funds. In Wisconsin, which, again, is very similar to what to here, we are way ahead of Wisconsin in many different ways. We're way ahead of them in terms of, the number of companies. But what is most troubling is when we've done, our research in this area, and recently over the interim, there was a working group that was pulled together by Deed that we, had requested. When we look at the trend lines in terms of startup companies and dollars with the smaller investments, we're falling behind. We still have 3M, we still have Medtronic, and I think we point to those companies. But when we look at where there is within this sector and within, again, the size of these companies, we're falling behind, and that's where we're seeing Wisconsin is the trend line is going up. And so we look at also some of the other states that have these programs in state. And, again, some of the reports that you hear about how Minnesota is doing, there was a recent report that came out, and it reflected on the fact that compared to other states, Minnesota is doing very well. But that was when they removed Massachusetts and also California. And many people would argue who are in, the high-tech sector, is that shouldn't we be competing with Massachusetts and California? I mean, if you take off the leaders and then you look at Minnesota, we need to be competing on that level. And that's where we are having a number of stories where some of our most promising companies are being snatched up by other states. This is not the silver bullet. This alone, this bill or these two bills are just the start. What we need to do in Minnesota and what we've heard repeatedly from the business community and also from some of the other groups in the state is that Minnesota has one of the has probably the least aggressive economic development plan of any of these major states, that we need to have a comprehensive long-term economic development plan. This is part of that. It's a start. but we need to have the vision of what we're doing over the next 10 years. I think that was probably a long, rambling explanation, Mr. Chair, but we are looking at what other states have done with this.
Yeah, and would also suggest to the committee that obviously this committee has spent a lot of time in the past on the university's request for being allowed to build the research facilities on a quicker basis, and this is kind of the partner with that.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, and I don't know if this answers your first question, but on the on the fiscal note, it says that the expected participation rate is 400 investors individually as part of an angel investment fund who will apply for certification under the program the first year, and then 100 new investors will apply for the program in subsequent years. So I don't know if that was a partial response to your question or not.
Not bad. Okay. Thanks. Further questions for Senator Saltzman, discussion? Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, just a question or two. This is more technical. On page 6, starting at line 19, it talks about an annual report has to be filed. I'm assuming this has to be filed with the Department of Revenue. It just says that they have to submit an annual report.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jeff Nelson, Office of Business Finance at Deed. That annual report would be submitted to Deed so that we could then provide an annual report to the legislature on the program success.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if the language in the bill would indicate that. I mean, it's probably within the sections here, but it just says an annual report, so. In another matter, more technical again, Mr. Chair, on page 7, starting at line 13, it says the commissioner shall file a report with the chairs of the legislative committees and divisions having jurisdictions. We usually also put the chairs and the ranking minority members.
Are you making that motion?
I'd make that motion, Mr. Chair.
So again, Sir Betzel,
on page 7, line 14, after the word chairs, add and the ranking minority members.
Okay, on the Betzel motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Motion carries. Sir Betzel, on your first point?
Well, I don't know if it's clear from the context of the rest of the bill to whom the annual report should be filed. If it's to be filed with Deed, you know, perhaps it ought to be, say, submit, you know, I guess to the commissioner or Deed or, as I say, I'm not quite sure.
So are you suggesting then, what, 621 after?
621 after, would it be to the commissioner? I mean, where would he, okay, I guess, must submit to the commissioner an annual report.
On that motion, is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Saltzman?
I think I'm done, Mr. Chair, unless there are other questions.
Questions, concerns from the committee? Discussion? Motion? Statements? Speeches? Senator Higgins? Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 2307 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. No further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
And next we have Senate File 2568. The committee's been a little bit docile this morning, but I think preparing for Senator Bach is the hope. And we have Senator Tomasoni moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. So we have Senate File 2568. Senator Higgins. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, we have two division reports. I apologize. I only had the one in front of me. Senator Tomasoni also moves adoption of the division report. Or Senator Ferguson moves adoption of the division report for the Environment Committee. All those in favor?
For which bill? 2568.
We have two division reports. So Senator Tomasoni has moved his division report. Senator Frederickson moves the division report from the Environment Division. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 2568 I've characterized it as a jobs bill. It probably is more accurately characterized as a tax credit bill for a number of different tax credits as a way to stimulate some economic development. Much of what's in here you have heard about already from Senator Saltzman. Article 1 of the bill is the angel investor credit that Senator Saltzman has been working on that you just passed out to the Tax Committee, and we'll take a look at those amendments that were made here relative to that. Article 2 is the CAPCO provisions that Senator Saltzman also passed out of the committee this morning. Article 3 is a historic building tax credit. Under current law, there is a federal tax credit for renovating historic buildings. And what this would provide for is that if a building is eligible for the federal tax credit, it would provide a 20% state tax credit for that historical building renovation. And the point of that, Mr. Chairman, is we've all read a great deal about how the financial markets are froze up and even good developers can't get financing for projects. What this is intended to do is put a tax credit in place, which is just like putting equity into a project. And then possibly a project might then be bankable with an additional tax credit available to it and reduce the equity requirement at the bank.
Mr. Chairman.
Chair Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, the Senate has passed this historic tax credit many times. I've carried the bill. I think Senator Pogemiller has. Yeah. We just couldn't get it through the other body. So I hope we have better luck this year.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, we're making good headway this year. And the Senate also has passed the angel credit, and we haven't been successful with it yet. But I do think that this year it's looking more likely than in previous sessions.
Although just to comment, Senator Betzel doesn't care for some of my historic meandering, but the person in there's an irony that the person who's been most responsible for the historic tax credit is a Minnesotan. It's Dick Moe, and who years ago
I didn't know he was from Minnesota.
Yeah, he's from Western Minnesota, and years ago he was in the Attorney General's office originally, but he was chairman of the state DFL party. Then became Senator Mondale's chief of staff, was Vice President Mondale's chief of staff. And in the early 90s, he became president of the Trust for Historic Preservation and just announced his retirement about 6 months ago. So he remained in Washington over the years, but he was the guy who did it throughout the country and was from Minnesota. And still comes back here occasionally.
Mr. Chairman, Article 4 are some change, we're adding a new kind of a TIF district, and I had this in last year's Senate tax bill and was unable to get the House to agree to it. I think this year they're looking at more interest in it, and what it really is I would characterize it as kind of a anti-sprawl provision. It creates a new kind of eligibility for tax increment financing by creating something called a compact development TIF district. So it's probably easiest to explain it by using an example. If you had a city block downtown and you wanted to redevelop that, under current law there are limitations on what's eligible for TIF. So what this would do is it would say that if you're going to redevelop a piece of property and you're going to build three times the square footage on that parcel of property than it is there today, that project would be eligible for tax increment financing. So it's an effort to try and encourage more redevelopment, more compact development by essentially, adding square footage on the same kind of a footprint than what previously was there. The House really has wanted a sunset on the provision to see if it works, how much it's utilized, and we actually have a sunset in it this year. There are also some other TIF provisions that relax some of the use on economic development districts where jobs are created. There's some special TIF provisions for the use of housing replacement TIF districts. There are some cities in the state that are allowed to use tax increment financing on scattered housing sites This increases the number of parcels available for some of the communities that have that authorization. Also gives that authority to the city of St. Paul. There are provisions in here in Article 5 for the Mall of America expansion. The way the legislation, the current law is relative to the expansion of the mall, there's a requirement in the current law that says they have to present a completed development agreement for the project before the city is authorized to impose the adder taxes on the mall property. We gave the city of Bloomington kind of a menu of different taxes they can impose on the mall property, things like an additional sales tax on purchases at the mall that will provide for the repayment of the bonds to build the parking ramp for the mall expansion. What's contained in here, you know, we passed that in 2008. Obviously, we all know what's happened to the economy. They haven't been able to hold all that entire $2 billion project together. So what the provisions in here relative to the mall do is allow them to start a phase-type construction of the Mall of America expansion. And then there's our repealer, Mr. Chairman. When the mall was originally built, there were some limiting conditions put on what was eligible to be TIF on the property. This repeals that to give the city some additional authority relative to the use of tax increment financing out on the mall site. So, Mr. Chairman, that's what's in here. What Representative Lincheski and I have not agreed to yet is how we're going to pay for this. We've had multiple meetings with the Commissioner of Revenue about what would the governor be willing to accept. And we, so far, the governor's office has been very noncommittal as to what kind of revenue he'd be willing to accept. He's basically said you need to cut something in your tax expenditure budget in order to pay for this. He's not going to agree to any new revenue of any kind. So we're still having those discussions with him, but I would expect when this gets to the tax committee, this bill is going to be paid for within the tax committee's jurisdiction by either reducing aids and credits to cities or some kind of removing some kind of a tax credit or limiting one or some kind of a tax expenditure, whatever we seem to be able to negotiate with the governor. So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my comments. I know council has drafted a couple amendments relative to the fees that are collected in the bill. And as long as Senator Dahl is here, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to take up my amendment first, if I could. And
before you do that, Senator Bach, Senator Bach's put together a comprehensive bill, obviously does a number of things, and appreciate the discussion by Senator Bach about the bill. Would like within this committee, you know, to concentrate on the finance particulars of the bill, and not this bill is certainly much more of a tax bill than it is a finance bill for all the reasons Senator Bach discussed. You know, both provisions and that we don't have the revenue to fund this just through general fund dollars. So we want to make sure that we certainly can ask any questions to Senator Bach about the bill and vote however we might choose, but would like to keep the discussion more centered on the finance provisions. And Senator Bach, just to do that before we take the amendments, if it's possible for you just to maybe specify the finance provisions in the bill or what you're looking for from this committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the only issue relative to finance are the fees that are collected both for the CAPCO program and for the Angel Investor Credit Program, and Council has drafted an amendment that essentially puts those fees into the general fund and then appropriates those fees out of the general fund to administer the two programs. And I think there's also another amendment relative to the fee receipts for the historicals that would be, we would create a special account over at the Historical Society to hold those fees for their cost of administering the Historic Building Tax Credit Program. So I think those are the only provisions probably relative to general fund spending. It's fees that we're kind of redirecting.
Okay, thanks. All right, we haven't distributed the A4 amendment. Just wait a second before it's passed out. Senator Bach?
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe I guess it's as I described it. The fees are collected, deposited into the general fund, and then reappropriated out to deed. And Mossman can correct me if I haven't characterized it accurately.
Mr. Chair, members, that's correct. It's similar to the language you put on for the last two bills.
Move it. Senator Higgins moves adoption of the 84 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Okay, we're also having distributed the A7 amendment. If members have the A7 amendment, Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, the issue is the same. It allows the fees that are collected relative to the historic building tax credit program to be credited to a special account over at the Historical Society for their cost in administering the tax credit program.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
I'll move the A7 amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Pappas' motion on A7. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Bach.
And then, Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomassoni has an amendment, and I see he's noticeably absent. Oh, there he is.
How
did you get way out on that? Mr. Chairman, how does a senior member like Senator Foley and Senator Tomassoni end up so far out on the end of the table?
We're all senior members.
Because everybody's pretty senior, aren't they? Oh, but I look around.
Yeah, see, that's the difference, Senator Bach, that you and I have in our respective committees. You have people... you just kind of command it. I'm just commanded by all these senior people. It's a lot tougher
Senator,
for me.
Senator Cohen, that's enough. Now move on. Command.
I think even worse, Mr. Chairman, is you have a lot of committee chairs at your table, and that makes it additional challenging, I would think.
Maybe we could reorganize the Senate. All right, we're having to distribute the A8 amendment.
Thanks.
That's Senator Tomassoni. We've been told this is your amendment.
Well, Senator Bach's amendment, but I'm going to move it, Mr. Chairman.
So. Okay. Or Senator Bach, who's?
Mr. Chairman, if the A8 is in front of us, this being a jobs bill, there are a number of things we're doing here relative to the spending of some taconite tax proceeds. I'm a little and these provisions would normally be carried in an omnibus tax bill. But I'm a little bit concerned about the likelihood that we're going to get one of those this session. So I thought these provisions do fit well into a jobs bill, and they are tax provisions. So once they're
in, Bach, if I can ask, would this be better offered in your committee then, if it's a tax amendment? I think that'd be the preference.
Well, let's see.
Your call, but
Mr. Chairman, this could fit in my committee also. So. It's kind of a finance at the same time, so this would be a good spot for it.
Well, I don't think, Mr. Chairman, it really matters.
But
just to, so that the committee sees what we're trying to do here, on line 1.17, you'll see out of the Doug Johnson Trust Fund, there was a previous appropriation of $1 million. We're changing that to a 1.5. A program we've recently implemented up at the Iron Range Resources is very similar to the Perpich Mead program that was done in the 80s during that very deep recession. We used some taconite money to provide up to a $5 an hour wage subsidy for businesses that were willing to add employees. And what the program has been very successful. We've had, I think, probably over a couple dozen businesses and more than 100 people hired as a result of it. It's been successful enough that we need to appropriate some additional money out of the trust fund for its purpose. And then we also have budget problems just like every other division does around here with state employees. So in Section 2, under current law, the commissioner at Iron Range Resources has the authority to offer an early retirement incentive program, permissive authority. And we did that a couple of years ago. And the commissioner did that, but the commissioner has been reluctant to offer a second round of early retirement incentives so that we could reduce the complement at Iron Range Resources even further. So this actually would require the commissioner to develop an additional early retirement incentive program to reduce the complement at the agency, and moves the date out of the authorization to be able to do that. There's no cost to the general fund here. It's all paid for through the IRRB's budget, which is funded by taconite taxes. Section 3 are a number of percent. I have to explain to you why it says percent rather than dollars. And 0.159 cents of a penny, 0.159 of a penny, actually equals about $50,000. There are a number of infrastructure projects in here for cities across the taconite relief area that have been negotiated out between members of the Iron Range legislative delegation and our cities that we represent. These are all shovel-ready projects in these communities, anywhere from $50,000 of work to $1 million of work. The total in the 43 projects is about $8 million of taconite spending. The reason we're proposing to do this in law rather than just do it at the agency is if the agency does it, they go through a very cumbersome process of going out for a grant-type program, community development grant-type program, and it takes months and months by the time the agency gets all the requests in, reviews them, and they finally get back to the board. And we really thought that if we just put it in law, these projects are more likely to happen sooner. So it spends about $8 million of taconite money. And then Article 7, Mr. Chairman, that is why Senator Dahl is here to speak to that. As I understand it, this is a bill that he has carried that passed a couple of Senate committees, and he came to me yesterday and asked if I could find a home for it. We're not sure, I guess, exactly if it's going to be able to travel on its own. It is on the Senate floor, but it would be it seems like there's a lot of support for his bill. But what I don't know is what the status in the House is relative to its passage as a standalone bill. So it seemed like this jobs bill would be a good place to contain it. So him and I had that discussion yesterday, and it seemed like it would fit in this amendment. So, Mr. Chairman, to explain that, I'd have to turn things over to Senator Dahl.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Bach. A lot of you members have heard this bill already. This is bill on property-assessed clean energy financing for energy efficiency and renewable energy projects. As we know that, there's a lot of risk-averse lenders out there right now, and a lot of tradesmen on the bench, and we're looking at a way to get a tool out in the box to the cities to be able to help generate some jobs. And we feel this would be a one tool that would actually be able to kind of jumpstart that. What this is a voluntary program that cities could set up whereby qualifying home or businesses for renewable energy projects or energy efficiency retrofits would qualify for a special assessment on the property tax to finance the project. And, again, it's entirely voluntary. Cities that would do this, they'd have some, there's some criteria in here on how to set this up, what steps they need to take. There would be an energy audit. There would be a qualifying contractors involved in the project, an inspection follow-up to verify that there was the work was done properly, that there was the energy, that the savings that they expected to get were being achieved. And then revenue bonds would be used to finance the project. And that's, in a nutshell, what this program does. And I'd stand for any questions from members.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I strongly support the bill. It's a very good bill and a good program, and it has a lot of support around the state. We sort of let it go without going to finance because it didn't involve any state money within my division's budget, and so that's why it went right to the floor, and so that's why we haven't seen it. It does relate to bonds issued by cities, and as Senator Dahl said, it's voluntary. It's just an option for cities that are interested in finding another way to help their community save energy or implement renewable energy projects, and there's just a tremendous amount of interest around the state in doing this. So
the bill itself
was
heard
in jobs.
It was heard in Senator Chaudhry's committee.
It was heard in Senator Prettner-Solin's committee.
We had a good
debate in that committee.
And Mr. Chair, also in state and local, we've heard in both those committees.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, I understand the League of Cities supports the DAL provisions.
Okay, anything else on the eight amendment, Senator Bach? Or any other questions for Senator Dahl? I'm sorry, Senator Pappas?
Not for Senator Dahl, for Senator Bach. Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, on Section 3, did you say that all these different little projects, they were approved? Were they approved by the IRRB, or who were they approved by?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, the range legislators sent a request out to their cities if there were some infrastructure projects that they would like to do if we had a pot of money for them, things that were shovel-ready.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a menu of the response that came back from the cities in the Taconite Leaf area about projects they have that are ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
The point of putting them in here is so that by the time we get out of session and into the next fiscal year at the agency, they send an RFP out to the city saying we're going to offer a round of community development grants for infrastructure. By the time we go through that pretty cumbersome process of soliciting requests for projects, getting them back, reviewing them, the board finally approving them, we're probably going to miss the construction season. So the intent of it is really only to try and make sure that these projects happen during this construction season.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the board would, I think we would approve this entire list at a board meeting, but the only thing is we would miss the construction season.
So, Mr. Chairman, so they is this the entire list, or did the range delegation kind of pick and choose?
But Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, the House members put this list together and came to the Senate and asked us to put it in law for them. I don't believe Senator Tomasoni had a lot of participation in putting the list together. You know, like House members, they're probably a little closer connected to their communities because they have fewer of them. So I personally didn't have any participation in developing the 43 projects, but I know my House member, Representative Dill, did.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
And Senator Pappas, we've done this exact same thing at least two times in the past, and we found that it works very, very good to get people back to work and to get some of these infrastructure projects going. And it's easily the most streamlined way of doing this for the way things are set up at the agency.
What shocks me is, going through this, I remember some similar discussion, but I can't believe that the senators from the range didn't participate. That's okay. I'll accept that face value.
In the Senate.
Sarah Betzold.
I just note that if it's infrastructure, I'm not trying to figure out how the two dentists figure into that.
Oh. The
drill ready.
Mr. Chairman, that might be the exception. As long as Senator Betzel brings that up, we have, you know, like most rural areas of the state, we're really struggling attracting dentists to our communities. So we've actually offered a program. I think we characterize it as a loan forgiveness program where we give dentists about $125,000 if they're willing to come to one of those range communities and locate a dental practice that's really intended to offset some of their debt. I think we probably have pretty close to adequate dental services right now, but the age of our dentists is very concerning to all of us. So we're trying to offer. We did it last year, and we were successful in finding a couple of dentists that were willing to come and buy practices of existing dentists that were close to retirement. So my apologies for, the House drafted the language, but it's a program we currently have, and this is an extension of
that. Mr. Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, as Senator Bach said, this program worked pretty good with, I think it was three dentists, actually. And this one is drill ready.
Yes, pick and drill. Pick and drill.
We have
Senator Pappas. Mr. Chairman, actually, I wish that a lot of our communities had access to funds to be able to help with these kind of projects, because we get a lot of requests for the bonding bill for projects like these that are all really strictly local, and it's really hard to turn them down or not do them because there's really a need out there for infrastructure. My concern is just that the city, that there's a transparent process, that the city council, at least somebody kind of, there's a process where they approve. Because I do have a situation in my city with our half-cent sales tax where the city council members have a little slush fund where they can fund their own little pet projects. And I think it's really a bad practice to do that. I think it needs to be more of a kind of a public process.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, what ends up happening with this is once this money is authorized, the city actually has to submit an application for the money to Iron Range Resources. So this money does not flow directly to the city. It's just made available at Iron Range Resources. They will then contact the city and say, this legislation was passed. You need to submit an application to the agency before the agency will release the money. So there is still a process where a city has to request the money from the agency.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say that, we need as much help as we can get with dental access in this state, so anybody who's got some money in their budget that could put some toward it, it would be a very good thing.
Yep, Senator Higgins.
I'm looking at the 2.27 to 2.29, and it's be allocated under Minnesota statute something or another. Where would the money otherwise go?
In current law, there is 33.9 cents a ton of the taconite tax money that's collected from the mines that flows into an account called the taconite homestead account. And what the taconite homestead account does is it provides for a property tax reduction for homeowners, a credit towards their property tax bill for homeowners of, depending on if you have a mine in your community or not, anywhere from about $295 to $315. There's like two numbers. The 315 is if you have a mine in your community. The lower number of, I think it's like 295, is if you do not have a mine. That actually shows up on your property tax statement that reduces your property taxes by that amount. Now, the argument for that is why do those range homesteads get a tax credit like that? Is the taconite tax is paid in lieu of a property tax. So the mines are not assessed property taxes. If the mines were on the property tax rolls, it would help buy down everybody's property taxes because it would spread the burden and reduce the burden on homes. So it's intended to mirror, if the mines were on the property tax, homeowners' property taxes would be reduced. So we take 33.9 cents a ton and put it into the taconite homestead account that then pays out the roughly $300 a year to taconite homesteads. That fund has a surplus in it right now. So what this does is it reduces the appropriation for this 1 year that flows into that fund. There's an adequate reserve to make the distributions to the homesteads. So it reduces the money that flows into that fund from 33.9 cents a ton. It takes 27 point some cents of the 39 for 1 year and redirects it for these economic development purposes.
Okay. Further discussion on the A8 amendment? If not, Senator Tomasoni has moved adoption of the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion, are there further amendments?
The bill, Senator Mr. Chairman.
Senator Betzolden?
Mr. Chair, I think we need to clean up the angel credit thing just like we did on the Salzman bill. On page 6, line 30, after the word submit, put the words to the commissioner. That's that annual report again.
Okay. On Senator Betzel's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
And then, Mr. Chair, on page 7, line 24, after the word chairs, add the words and the ranking minority members.
Okay. On the Betzel's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Further amendments or discussion?
I'll move the bill.
Senator Tomasoni moves that Senate file 2568 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred. I'm sorry, Senator Bach.
Re-referred to taxes.
Referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator
Mr.
Bach.
Chairman, I want to publicly thank Senator Saltzman. She's put an incredible amount of work into the Angel Credit and into the Capco Credit. as well as Senator Metzen. Some of these provisions he did a lot of work on last year in his jobs bill. They both deserve a lot of credit for moving this forward. This is the Senate companion to the House bill. I do hope that we're able to kind of, to the extent we can, pre-confer an agreement with the House so that we're able to pass this and send it to the governor's desk before Easter. But I'm a little uncertain we're going to be able to find the revenue to pay for it. But that is going to be our intent, is to try, tentatively at least, to have this on the floor of the Senate with an agreed-upon language with the House next Thursday before we go home for the Easter recess. So this will be heard in taxes next week, early next week.
All right. Thank you, Senator Bach.
Thank you very much, members of the committee.
Okay, then the last bill on the agenda is Senator Higgins, Senate File 2580.
Mr. Chair, this bill was originally sent to finance because we were going to make a new state holiday. And then we got the fiscal note and went, oopie, that's really expensive. So it now is an observance of Juneteenth. And Juneteenth is the oldest known celebration that celebrates the end of African slavery in the United States. And in Galveston, Texas, in 1865, the African slaves found out that they had been freed by President Lincoln 2.5 years after they had actually been freed. And that occurred on June 19th of that year, and so there began a celebration that got shortened to Juneteenth. The Twin Cities area has had a Juneteenth celebration for almost 25 years. This is an acknowledgement and making a state observance of that day.
And Senator Higgins, I know that there have been observances within the cities. Anything on a statewide basis up to this point?
Mr. Chair, there in the Twin Cities area, I believe Duluth has a celebration. They're localized at this point. But this would authorize the governor to issue a proclamation observing the celebration and recognizing the important contributions that African Americans have made in our state.
And again, at this point, there's no cost as such because you started out as a holiday. And
we pared it down to an observance in state and local government.
Discussion on the bill.
Seeing none, Mr. Chair, I'll move that Senate File 2580 be recommended to pass, and I think it just goes to the floor.
Okay, on Senator Higgins' motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion
Thank
carries.
You.
Members, I'm sorry, Senator Olson. That completes the agenda. Let me just remind Chairman that if you're putting together omnibus policy bills in your division that you want heard by the full committee, we do have the deadline on the 29th and for omnibus bills, and we're going to be fairly busy because we expect some kind of conference committee with the finance bill, depending on what happens in the tax committee and on the floor with that bill and other activities. So keep that in mind, and obviously 29th will be finishing early, so we're not going to have a lengthy meeting that day.
Chairman.
So if there's nothing else, I'm sorry, Senator Thomas Loney?
Chairman, the 29th, they have to be out of this committee or out of our own committee?
Out of this committee. I'm sorry, out of division. I misstated that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
But, Senator Pappas?
Are many other people doing second finance bills?
Pardon me?
After we did our first bill, our cut bill.
Right.
Are many other committee division chairs doing second finance bills?
Well,
I mean, I've done a policy bill, but I haven't done a second finance.
Well, obviously, as this committee knows, we have not dealt with the two biggest divisions, although...
No, I mean the ones that already
Mr. Chairman.
Have passed.
I'm not aware of it. Senator Thomas-Loney?
I can give Senator Pappas an example. Some bills come out of Senator Metzen's committee that are policy bills but have some kind of fiscal implication, so they get sent to my committee.
If
and so...
And you're doing an omnibus?
Yeah, and so we're doing an omnibus.
Okay.
Chairman, there are some in environment division also.
Okay. Well, Senator Betzel, did you?
Well, in the state government bill, we just forwarded some of the governor's recs here, but I'm just wondering, you know, and I'll have to talk to you, should I just pull that back? Because there's some other bills that probably might be appropriate to load onto there and fold, because I think what the House did was they loaded those policy bills into the omnibus budget bill, which we didn't do.
I tried not to do.
So, you know, at some point, these are not going to match up fairly easily. So I guess we've got to figure out what the House is doing, because if they're loading all the policy things up in the omnibus budget bill and we're not, how do we conferee that stuff?
Well, if you're going to try to get, we're either going to adopt not a rule, but maybe in the context of the budget bill, say we're not going to deal with any of those issues that are House provisions, potentially, or if we find we're forced to deal with some of them. I mean that question is difficult to answer until we get into a conference committee, and the expectation and the hope is that the bills would be passed off the floor of the House and the Senate next Monday, with the hope, depending on what happens, do we get a bill to the governor by, the end of the week? So,
but you want a Senate position on some of these?
Well, we probably should.
Yeah, I mean, I can establish a Senate position, but if the House won't pass companion to my bill, as I say, the only place it's going to be conferred would be in that budget bill. So I think we need to have some high-level discussions with the House what their plans
are.
I may have the same situation.
Okay. It's not the best process, but if the House puts us in that position, we don't want you to get caught short for the lack of any other avenue.
You have to fight.
So if you can, to play it safe.
We'll do what we can. So.
All right. Okay. Thank you.